105 Drive with Julian Clover. Cambridge
105. Sam, John, welcome both to Cambridge 105. This survey reminds me of my niece and nephew, who are aged 5 and 7, growing on 14 and 15. And I know the other day, Emerson, my nephew, was playing around with the TV and happily told me, oh yes, they've changed the television, it's a different colour now, because the operating company had updated the TV guide. And I guess that's kind of typical of kids these days, isn't it?
Yes, this is definitely something that is kind of being found in families across the country. So we kind of looked at a survey to look at this. So we asked 2,000 families around the country kind of who is best at technology in their home. And then also the other thing that we did, which was the kind of the part of the study I was really involved with, we got 10 families, so kind of parents and children, in to our lab. And we did a series of studies to look in more detail. Firstly, at kind of why this is. So why are children so fast at picking up new forms of technology? And secondly, kind of more generally looking at their attitudes to technology. So with that, we were particularly interested in kind of these smart meters and smart homes that British Gas are heavily involved in nowadays. And kind of particularly interested in this idea that kind of children who've never known anything different, you know, they've never known anything other than a home that kind of reacts to you and kind of looks after you and changes depending on how you kind of behave. Whereas adults, of course, never had that before. So how that affects kind of their attitudes to kind of the technology.
And that's quite interesting, because children are being exposed to technology at a very early age. I know there's children's versions of various tablets are on the market. The TV companies produce special versions of their apps so they can get their content quicker. And all around them, there's so many different devices. And I'm wondering if this eventually feeds through, John, to the kind of technology that you then deploy for the parents.
Indeed. I mean, with the smart meters, you're able to see how much you're spending up front. So, you know, you turn a kettle on, you can see how much that's costing. And obviously that has to filter through to our children. I've got two children. One's 5. And one's 12, and you know that. But both of them constantly, they've always got stuff on, they leave stuff on, and when they see how much they're spending, you know, you can then, you know, put that into them that, you know, lower is better, we need to use less energy.
I guess there's a danger, of course, that the children learn how to turn up the thermostat because they want to be nice and warm, and they don't necessarily realise all of the benefits of turning it down a few degrees.
Yeah, I think there is kind of certainly a benefit, though, just from, you know, just letting them see it and kind of letting them kind of discover for themselves. But the other thing that we were really interested in looking at was because kind of new, kind of more kind of original, more innovative uses of kind of these kinds of smart meters and smart homes. So, you know, as adults, kind of we did some work kind of looking at this kind of, you know, flexibility of technology use. So kind of as adults, we tend to be much more generally kind of much more constrained in our thinking. So we tend to see things one way and we find it hard to see things kind of two ways at once. Whereas children find it easier to shift from one way of seeing things to another way of seeing things. So we did some studies kind of looking at, you know, design your own smart bedroom. Kind of this is the technology, kind of what would you use it for? And found some really interesting results. So children, kind of as we thought they would be, are much, much more kind of creative and innovative in the uses that they come up with for technology, whereas kind of adults tend to see things one way.
And is the suggestion that the way the kids starting off with technology, by the time they get into their 30s or 40s, they'll be reacting in a completely different way to how today's 30 and 40-year-olds do?
Yeah, so that's a really interesting question, and it kind of breaks down in one way. So in one way, it's a kind of one way of looking at it is kind of our brain changes as we get older, and so just a kind of at a very kind of coarse level, kind of basically in a child's brain, everything is much more of a jumble. So all the different individual cells in the brain, neurons, kind of they're much, much more generally interconnected with one another. And then once we kind of figure out kind of one solution, so one kind of network kind of works. The kind of neurons that fire together wire together. So basically finding something that works strengthens the connections between the different networks. And basically that means as we learn to do something, we get faster and more efficient. But also kind of it means that we become less flexible because we have these kind of predetermined kind of networks and kind of cells that fire together. So kind of a child kind of, when you're young, you're very fast at forming new connections. You can very easily shift from kind of one network configuration to another. And then as you get older, kind of you get kind of less flexible. So in a way, It could be that the older children, by the time they're 30, kind of they will be as inflexible as we are kind of when we're 30. So kind of that's kind of, you know, that suggests kind of you've got to chuck new things at children when they're young, during their age of kind of peak acquisition. But the other way of kind of thinking of it is kind of technology is forcing everybody to kind of learn new things. Everybody is benefiting from this kind of constantly humbling position of, you know, something new has come along, you know, everything that I've learned up till now I've had to forget. So kind of that suggests kind of, if you think of it that way, then that suggests that kind of children are going to be much, much more flexible by the time they're 30 than kind of we are still.
And I'm wondering if this is the same sort of thing in the way that children are able to learn languages better, by which I mean obviously more than their mother tongue, as we get older, for the most part anyway. It's incredibly difficult.
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question. And it's quite tricky. So with language, there is more of a question of kind of critical period. So there's a lot of research gone into it. You know, we go through kind of a phase where we're very fast at acquiring language. And then kind of we slow down. And there is some research, certainly with kind of animals, about whether you can extend this critical period, you know, whether you can kind of experimentally manipulate the environment to mean that this kind of phase of kind of peak learning goes on. So it's kind of similar in some ways and kind of different in other ways. But yeah, it's a good kind of thing, you know, generally. You know, a baby's kind of capacity for learning, you know, pure things. Like, so I do some experiments kind of where you give them quite a pure kind of statistical structure. So like there's a kind of a pattern to be noticed. And that kind of thing is much stronger in a young child than an old child. So that applies both to language learning and to kind of learning new forms of technology.
And over time, is the if you like, the brain just tapping into areas that might not have been used before and are being unleashed or released, if you like, by this technology? Or is the human brain, is it going to evolve in order to work even more with technology, which I suspect is probably going to take many hundreds of years.
Sorry, I missed the end of that question. Say the end of that question again. I'm
just going to say that if the brain does evolve, maybe that would be over a few hundred years rather than maybe few years that the technologists need it to be.
No, that's a really, really interesting question. So kind of, so DNA kind of changes kind of relatively slowly is what we've certainly always thought of been the case. So, you know, particularly with humans, you know, we've got, so with fruit flies that kind of have a very short life cycle, we can see the kind of DNA changing, you know, over the course of many generations, for a fruit fly only takes like a couple of months to get through, whereas to get through many generations for a human kind of takes kind of much, much longer. So it's very hard for us to study. So to a large degree, you know, even if you think back to, you know, 1,000 years ago, when to get a single kind of piece of information from London to Manchester and back would take kind of someone riding for 3 weeks on horseback. You know, even as recently as 100 years ago, you know, telephones kind of only came around about kind of 1900. So it's a kind of, it's quite an interesting thing to think about, that we have very similar kind of brain DNA to what we had, you know, 200 or 300 years ago, but we're using our brains for such different things. On the other hand, though, there is research, and again, it's animal research, so kind of we can study this kind of much more efficiently in animals, showing that the environment, being exposed to different types of environment, does actually physically change how our brain develops. So kind of they brought up kind of species of rats, so they take half of the family of rats, they raise it in what we call an enriched environment, so that's where there's lots of social partners, lots of things to play with, and then they raise the other half of the same family of rats in what they call impoverished environments. So they're on their own, kind of in a cage with no kind of forms of kind of social interaction or stimulation. And then when they die, they look at the brains of the two rats, and they show that kind of the brains of the rats kind of raised in this enriched environment actually physically have more connections. So it's a more the wiring network of their brain is actually physically more complex. So kind of it's a bit of both. On the one hand, you know, our DNA kind of isn't keeping up. It isn't changing very fast. But on the other, you know, we do know that the environment does affect physically how our brains develop.
That's very interesting. And John, just to end with you, if I can, all of this presumably then feeds back, does it, into the kind of smart products that British Gas and others are introducing into our homes?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, with the, you know, the different technologies, obviously the smart meters, again, where I said earlier that, you know, you can physically see how much you're spending on a day-to-day basis. Hive, which, you know, you can turn your heating on and off from anywhere around the world if you'd like. There's, you know, light bulbs, video cameras that you can, you know, feed straight back to your phone. You know, and again, as the technology evolves, you know, there's more and more gets added to it.
Oh, it's a fascinating area. John, also Dr. Sam, thank you both very much for speaking to Cambridge 105 this afternoon.
Great. Thanks so much, Julian.
Thank you.